Well, I don't know about y'all, but when I spend hours and hours on my lawn, the last thing I want is it to look a little faded, a little dead, and especially weed-free. So when I'm out there working on my lawn, after I cut it, I apply Weed and Feed from Bonide. It's a four-way, fast-acting, through the shoots, kills your weeds and gives it a light feeding for 8 to 10 weeks. You can get Bonide's Weed and Feed all over the state, including Treeland Nurseries and Mesa. You can also find this great Bonide American family-made product in Violas and Flagstaff or Mesquite Valley Growers in Tucson. It's a perfect time to apply it to your winter lawn if you're trying to eke it along just a little bit more into May. Keep it weed-free before you kill it off and let the summer Bermuda come in. And right now, we're bringing in Laura from Wilcox into the conversation at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you.
Cochise County, beautiful Wilcox, Arizona. Good morning,
Laura.
Oh,
yeah.
Good
morning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I live for is the smell of those beautiful citrus blossoms in the spring, but I'm not up for planting citrus. So what I'm looking for in my area is to be able to grow a fragrant vine, a climbing vine of some kind that will survive in Wilcox. Do you have any recommendations?
That elevation's, that'd what, 3,600, 3,700?
Yeah, it's about 4,000 and change.
So okay. That's a little higher than your...
Lower.
Well, than the Camp Verde growing yard.
Oh,
but
right.
It's pretty close.
Pretty close to our Camp Verde. You know, they have a lot of flowering jasmine vine that has a very fragrant bloom.
Yeah.
You know, that might be a good option. Also flowering honeysuckle, which is very fast growing, attracts pollinators. It's just a really great, easy to grow vine. And then, of course, roses, which might be a little more work, but... Definitely, you can get a fragrant climbing rose as well.
How about wisteria, Misty?
Oh, absolutely. I didn't think of, we can barely grow those up here. They hardly ever bloom, but it's one of my favorite blooms, and we had them in Page, which is a similar elevation to where you live.
I think they'd be just right at 4,000 feet. If you can live with something that loses its leaves in the winter, they're going to go dormant. But you talk about smell. Holy cow.
Right. That's a great one.
And I love the smell of jasmine, but that's too high, I would think.
For us, it is, right. In Sedona and Camp Verde, they do grow it a lot.
So it would still be pretty good in Cochise at Wilcox, right at that 4,000?
Right.
Family gatherings at 4th of July just aren't the same without smelling Mama Kay's jasmine vines.
The whole back patio was supported by columns that she had the jasmine completely encased, and you couldn't walk out that backyard without inhaling that jasmine smell. It's
every
all,
time
all
I
part
walk
of the
by
family
one,
reunion.
So, well, there's a couple great suggestions for you, Laura. We appreciate the phone call. Let's move to, let's see, who's been on hold the longest? That would be Katie with a question about almond trees. Welcome to the broadcast, Katie.
Good morning. I've got an almond tree. It's about 6 years old, and it didn't produce the first year, but then it produced increasingly the next 3 years. And last year and this year, it blooms, but the blooms aren't setting. And I know that it's in the peach family. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, like with a pecan tree, you're supposed to give them zinc. And I was wondering, is there something I don't know about that I'm supposed to be giving the almond tree in the spring?
Well, I'd almost guess you got a pollination problem. You know, almond industry is pretty much the sole reason we have a bee and honey industry in this country, because that's where almost every beekeeper in the whole Southwest takes their bees to the Central Valley of California when the almonds are blooming. And that's for one reason, to pollinate them. And they're not apparently the easiest tree to pollinate, and they need some help. And the fact that you probably have a poor almond tree setting all by itself without any other almonds in the whole area, and it may not be a self-pollinator as well. There are almonds that need another almond tree to pollinate them, could, in fact, be your issue. In fact, that would be my guess. Zinc will help the fruit size fill out. It helps the meat in a nut of a pecan fill the shell out. It does some things like that, but it generally won't help you much with fruit set or pollination.
And there are people that will drop off beehives by your location. I don't know how much room you have. They do have certain requirements. And I was reading an article recently. Jay was mentioning that the bees and the almond just survive on each other. That if I remember right, and I will check this, I think I've got that article here in my book at the break, but it's close to a $10 billion industry.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. And I was at a conference last fall, and, you know, there's a lot of concern about honeybees and colony collapse and, you know, a lot of things going on. And this presenter said the biggest single threat to the bee population right now is the drought in California, because if the almond industry goes away, bees are gone.
Interesting.
just a matter of fact. So anyway, I would guess it's a pollination problem.
And I've become very interested in bees just for pollination at our property. And there's a new thing out of Australia that they're doing on a group start called Flow Hive that every bee expert I talk to say what this product's doing is impossible. But they've spent 3 years mastering it, and they're just going into production. And I'm going to take the risk and spend the $500 to get a unit to try it. And then I've also just got an invitation back to North Carolina. Bayer Advanced is having a bee seminar. Mm-hmm. When I was there 2 years ago, they were talking about the bee research that they were doing, and they've got an update, so they're scheduling another media event. They just sent that invitation this week.
Well, one of the biggest classes of insecticides that we sell, is at risk of going away because it's pretty toxic to bees. So
yeah, it's very interesting.
Now, inquiring minds want to know. I'm sitting here as a sideline participant to the landscaping hour, and we've got an almond tree. Misty, how does an almond tree decide if it's self-propagating or not?
I don't think it decides for itself.
Inquiring minds want to know the answer to this question. How does a tree do that?
That's a good question. Anybody want to take a shot at that?
I think Misty had the right answer. It doesn't decide by itself. Higher and greater determines that, and that's just the way they are. Certain varieties have more pollen than others and are able to pollinate themselves. Some things, like pistachios, actually have a male and a female. So you actually have to have, two trees, because the flower that occurs on one tree doesn't have, we're getting into X-rated talk here, but one tree doesn't have the male part or the female part. So you have to put them together and pour a little wine and light a candle, and then you, and then maybe you have some pistachios. So.
Okay, so let's rely on Jeff to save us and switch topics to ash trees.
Please.
I'm never going to open a bag of pistachios without thinking about this moment.
There you go.
I'm sitting here laughing along with you guys. I got an ash tree that is put too close to the house, and it's about 3 inches around at the base, and it's skinny, goes up. It's about 10 feet tall. It's just a baby. I'm guessing it's only like 2 years old, and it's already above the roof line as far as the skinny part, and it's bending over, and I'm just renting this house, but I know a little bit about trees, and that tree's going to destroy that roof, right? I was wondering if I could move that ash tree without damaging it, not to regrow because I moved it 3 feet.
Well, Warner's probably moves and does a lot more with deciduous trees than we do down here. But if you could wait one more year or about 9 more months, would be my suggestion. Do it when the tree loses its leaves next winter. You'd have a better chance of success than if you do it right now in the spring when it's leafing out and growing like crazy.
Right, I agree. We always say do it dormant, not in the fall, but in the right after winter when it's still dormant would be the best time.
And if you're renting, obviously get your landlord's permission.
and maybe he'd even pay for it.
Hey, there you go. Let's bring Stan into the conversation. Talk grapefruits. Something's eating them up, and we'll see how we can get them eliminated. Stan, go ahead, sir.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I've got a grapefruit tree that I've taken a couple of leaves to the local nursery, and it's been diagnosed with leaf miners. And I've been told that it's kind of a cosmetic issue, not to worry about it, but it's becoming really, really cosmetic. And I wonder if there's anything organic. I heard Romy talking in the 7 o'clock hour about the bonide oil spray. And I just wonder if that would take care of leaf miners. I don't want to put anything on there that's carcinogenic or going to mutate the grapefruit that are coming on it. And I just wonder what I can use to get rid of those leaf miners.
Well, spinosad, Stan, is lists thrips and leaf miners on it, and it's totally and completely safe. So you might give that a try. It's it can be found in Bonide's Captain Jack's
Dead Bug Brew.
Dead Bug Brew, thank you, Romy. And it's Fertilome has it also in a borer spray, and it's spin like you spin a tail, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D, spinosad. I don't know if, you know, maybe Misty has something else for leaf miners, but that would be my suggestion.
Okay, yeah, we cool. actually carry the same product.
There you go.
So. Very good. It must work.
It does.
Let's see. Do we have
what
time?
Do y'all use the product for up here? You don't really, you don't have citrus up here.
No, we do get thrips and leaf miners.
On?
On, oh gosh, thrips get on every flowering tree, roses.
Really?
Lilacs. Yeah, okay. It's a mess.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you as we move through the calls. Let's see if we can solve a zucchini problem real quick with Susan. Go ahead, ma'am.
Good morning.
Ms. Susan? Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. My zucchini, I'm in the valley, and my zucchini are doing great, but the flowers set, and the zucchini get about 3 inches long, and then they die and fall off. So I'm wondering if I need to feed them something, or I'm not finding any bugs or anything on them.
You're going to make me be Dr. Ruth again, aren't you?
Yeah.
it's a pollination problem.
Oh, it's a pollination problem.
That little thing that you think is a zucchini is just the ovary of the flower. It hasn't actually pollinated and developed. And a lot of times the first blooms that come out on a zucchini plant are a male flower. There is no female part for them to pollinate and become a fruit. So it's nothing to worry about on that first set of flowers of the spring anyway. So sometimes, and a lot of times, even with my own garden, we put our gardens in very protected spaces or a place, it's the only place we have, and we don't get enough wind, stuff like that, and we just end up with these pollination problems, and that's what's going on.
When we return, we'll be in Wickenburg at Jessica's house. Join us at 1-888-767-4348.